Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Gina R. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Tuesday, January 22nd, 2019. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we are at page XXX, the sixth or last paragraph, which begins, "This immediately precipitates us into," reading through three paragraphs ending with "no return to alcohol," and comments will be on all of those paragraphs. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Marissa E., 12 Traditions, Sherry K. B. Our readers will be Wendy B., Robin P., and Leslie M. Our newcomer greeter is Melanie C. The reference numbers for Monday, January 21st, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12,443, and Tuesday, January 22nd, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 12,446. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Marissa E. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Marissa E., recovered compulsive overeater outside Los Angeles. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, and I pass.
And thank you, Marissa E. I will now ask Sherry K. B. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. This is Sherry K. B. in Northern California, very grateful recovered compulsive overeater. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me be of service.
And thank you, Sherry KB. All right, here's how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, please make sure you're not using a speakerphone. Speak directly into your phone or headset. Press star one to unmute. It is not necessary to ask if you can be heard, as I will let you know if there's an issue. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star one to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speakers, should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page XXX, beginning with the sixth or last paragraph, which begins, "This immediately precipitates us into," reading through three paragraphs ending with "no return to alcohol," and will comment on all of those paragraphs. I will ask Wendy B. to begin reading.
Yeah, hi, this is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. This immediately precipitates.
Okay, I'm sorry, excuse me. I have an older edition. Can you tell me where we are? Are we in the doctor's opinion, or where are we?
Yes, we're in the doctor's opinion, which is page XXX, and that should be the same. So, thank you. Okay, please go ahead, Wendy.
Okay. This immediately precipitates us into the seething cauldron of debate. Much has been written, pro and con, but among physicians, the general opinion seems to be that most chronic alcoholics are doomed. What is the solution? Perhaps I can best answer this by relating one of my experiences. About 1 year prior to this experience, a man was brought in to be treated for chronic alcoholism. He had but partially recovered from a gastric hemorrhage and seemed to be a case of pathological mental deterioration. He had lost everything worthwhile in life and was only living one day, one might say, to drink. He frankly admitted and believed that for him there was no hope. Following the elimination of alcohol, there was found to be no permanent brain injury. He accepted the plan outlined in the book. 1 year later, he called to see me, and I experienced a very strange sensation. I knew the man by name and partly recognized his features, but there all resemblance ended. From a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck had emerged a man brimming over with self-reliance and contentment. I talked with him for some time, but was not able to bring myself to feel that I had known him before. To me, he was a stranger, and so he left me. A long time has passed with no return to alcohol. And so I was listening to the earlier meeting, and I found out that he was referring to Hank P. So that's the man. And he had more than just physical abstinence. He wasn't just, you know, a dry drunk with white-knuckled abstinence, but he had a spiritual transformation. And the words are so descriptive here. You know, he went from a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck to a man brimming over with self-reliance and contentment. And that's an overhaul of his thinking and his attitudes. And the only way we can achieve that is by starting with entire abstinence and, you know, putting down our alcoholic substances and accepting the plan outlined in the book. you know, which is working the steps every day to maintain my spiritual condition of God reliance, you know, not self-reliance, so I can have clarity of thought and be able to hear God's truth to me. And there was an example given this morning of the hecklers on the phone line, you know, making it hard for us to hear clearly the message spoken, and it's being like our disease, you know, being woken up when we eat our binge foods and we become cloudy and unable to hear the message of hope and truth. And I also heard on the meeting a reference to the word seem in the first paragraph. You know, the general opinion seems to be that most chronic alcoholics are doomed. And then they referred it to in the foreword about how we who have recovered from seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And, you know, I'm no longer hopeless. You know, if I've worked these steps, you know, I'm recovered and I've been transformed. And this is our message of hope. And that's all I have. Thank you for letting me share.
And thank you, Wendy B. Before I take any names, I did want to respond again to the person asking for a different edition. Yes, the Roman numerals will be a little bit different, but the text is the same. I just wanted to clarify that, and I appreciate that little bird who told me that. Okay, who would like to share on what was read today?
John K.
Jackie H.
John K.
Jackie H.
Oh, Jackie H. Okay.
Reggie O.
Julie E.B.
Cindy
D.
Did I miss somebody in all that?
Erica B.
Say that one more time. I heard the last initial B.
Yeah, this is Erica B.
Erica. Okay. We'll stop there, and then we'll get a new grouping after that, but this is a nice beginning. We'll have John K., Jackie H., Reggie O., Julie E.B., Cindy D., and Erica B. Hey, John, please go ahead.
Good morning. This is John Kiernan, recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. Thanks, thanks everybody, for running the meeting this morning. You know, I first of all, I always find it interesting when they talk about the how the man was unrecognizable, and I think about it's one of the reasons, at least for me, we a lot of times share our photos when we're leading a meeting, because a lot of us don't look anything like we did when we came in. I mean, at the birthday party this weekend, the closing speaker put up her pictures, and it blew me away. And it's, you know, it's obviously not just about that, but it does give something that, you know, like you don't see this in AA. There aren't people running around with drunk pictures, you know. The line that really keys me is this: among physicians, the general opinion is that most chronic alcoholics are doomed, you know. And, you know, when I do a lot of work in program service-wise, and one of the reasons I do it is because I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I live a time after the founding of AA and OA, you know, because otherwise, you know, I've been dead for 30 years. I mean, literally, you know, poor John, Titan's prime kind of thing, you know. And you know, before 1935, you had the disease I have, or the diseases I have, well, just get your affairs in order. But, you know, I mean, I think God, higher power, whatever you want to call it, had another plan. You know, to me, I've said it's like a chess game that was played. You know, you take a guy, Roland Hazard in Switzerland, he comes to New York, he gets involved with the Oxford group, they go to Vermont with a guy whose father is the judge who helps take Ebby and it diverts him, like the world's first diversion program. Ebby gets sober, comes back to New York, finds his friend Bill, who was from the same town that he was just in you know, anyway, and then out to Akron. Oh, and I think one of the real key ones in this, Dr. Silkworth, a doctor who was willing to admit, who admitted powerlessness. And it's like when you hear these stories about how there's a billion planets out there, but none of them have that exact combination to make life, or very few of them. Well, you unplug any of these components, and there's no AA, you know? And I also think there was a window, you know, there was a window, because doctors in AA still, a lot of them came from children of, you know, of having faith, and now there seems to be more and more secular kind of a situation of people really rebelling, especially in the medical community against any mention of a higher power. And the fact that this all happened when it did is wild. To me, it's amazing, you know. And I always wonder, how many other times this almost happened, but they didn't have a Dr. Silkworth. They didn't have a Dr. Bob, you know, and it didn't fall and it didn't work. And, you know, now there's this whole field of recovery, which I'm getting involved in, that wouldn't exist without Dr. Silkworth. And what does the vast majority of this huge recovery field come down to? The 12 steps. And I'll end on one thing. A guy I heard in AA at a meeting here in Malibu once. He was a little rich. Yes, I'm wrapping up. He a little rich kid, and he had been to 23 rehabs. And he said he sat down and figured it out one day that he cost his parents close to $500,000. And he said, they spent $500,000 to get me a big book. Anyway, with that, I pass.
Excellent. Thank you, John K. All right, Jackie H., you're next. You'll be followed by Reggie O. Please go ahead, Jackie.
Good morning. This is Jackie H., recovered in Colorado. Thank you for your service, and it's great to be here today. I appreciated the word seems being mentioned earlier. I really like that word. It says seems to be that most alcoholics are doomed. It just seems to be. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's true that we are doomed. And it follows it right away with what is the solution. And then he describes in this next paragraph, to me, he's describing the spiritual awakening, the entire psychic change of, I guess, Hank P. was also the name mentioned. And this happened because of the 12 steps. And, you know, I'm not so arrogant to think that the 12 steps is the only way somebody can get sober or quit eating compulsively. It is the only way that worked for me. And so I embraced this. I have nothing but respect and love for the people that did this book, for Bill Wilson, for Bob, and all the other people involved that brought this. And then for God, holding this book still sacred, and that we have a chance to do that, that we can pass it on. And the transformation of myself has been unbelievable. I don't even know who I am anymore when I look in the mirror. And it may not be so much the size of myself, but I see this aura that is totally different. The God essence that's in me is starting to shine through, that higher power, that love that has been buried with all of these character defects, these character defenses, these blocks, are now, as I am recovering, as I'm shedding all this old stuff, this beautiful person that I truly am and have always been is shining through. And I get to see it in the women that I work with. I get to hear the transformations over the phone. And so I am delighted. And again, I say I'm enthralled. That is a word that describes how I feel being part of this program and being able to be of maximum service to my fellows and my God. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you for letting me share.
And thank you, Jackie H. Okay, Reggie O., you are up next, and you'll be followed by Julie E.B. Please go ahead, Reggie.
Well, thanks so much, and thanks so much for your service, everybody, here this morning. This is Reggie O. in the greater Los Angeles area. So grateful. I just, you know, feel so joyful listening to people share about this and, you know, your experience of this, which is your experience of having gone through the steps. And I love that, but you follow in what Jackie said. I was thinking along the same lines, you know, it's like the general opinion seems to be that most chronic alcoholics are doomed, you know, and if, looking back over the course of, you know, compulsive eating histories, and even the ones when we hear people share and hear, you know, the decades that we've lived in disease, that's pretty chronic, you know. I mean, even a year to live in the, you know, the chronic experience of an addiction is really a pretty awful experience. But, you know, some of us have done it for years and decades, and no longer are there, you know. There is the promise of recovery and of being recovered. What is the solution? what is the solution? It says, first, you know, as we're learning from Dr. Silkworth, following the elimination of alcohol. So first, you know, it's following the elimination of compulsive eating, our binge foods, you know, the alcoholic foods or heroin foods, as my first guide and vision said. And then accepting the plan outlined in this book. That was pretty simple, you know, the elimination of alcohol first and then accepting the plan outlined in this book. This man had a pathological mental deterioration, and a year after he accepted the plan outlined in this book and apparently got recovered, the doctor didn't recognize him. He knew him only by name, and this wasn't someone who, you know, needed to lose all the weight that some of us had. I can't forget what the verb is here, but he was changed from the inside out, and that changing from the inside out glowed in his being. And you know, and we all get that promise. It's, you know, what's interesting, beautiful, interesting, overused word sometimes, but what's beautiful about this is that the promises in this book are that if you eliminate alcohol, eliminate compulsive eating and those foods, and accept the plan and work these steps, you will get recovered. And there are promises, you know, in every single one of the stories. And it's amazing to me, you know, and I hope it always will be, because the transformation is ongoing. It continues to evolve. So we're ever changing, which is pretty amazing. And it's just so, yeah, blessed, grateful to have stumbled upon, been guided to this community where we do what we do here. And I'll pass with that.
Oh, thank you so much, Reggie O. Julie E.B., you are up next, and you'll be followed by Cindy D. Julie, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in Colorado. A little bit of a blizzard for us here today. And as I'm sitting here, I'm just really was powerfully hit by the fact that there's a seething cauldron of debate that begins. It immediately precipitated, caused a seething cauldron of debate that there would be relief, suggested an entire abstinence. And some of us have heard that, even popping up on the line, heard it in meetings, had it with other people. And yet, if we follow the program, we know that we're to cease fighting anyone or anything. And someone earlier today, on the earlier meeting, you know, suggested they tell their sponsees, I can't fight the food, you know, we're not going to be fighting this. You're going to be doing this work one meal, one day at a time. And so it's not about fighting it. It's not about debating entire abstinence. It's about sharing that with entire abstinence, I have relief. What a blessing, and the kind of relief that's discussed here is not just from the 135 pounds. It's also from just having now a quiet mind and a way to make decisions and a way to live my life in a way not to step on the toes of my fellows or be in self-pity about when they're in what's important to them, when they're living their lives and it somehow isn't what I see, I can let my higher power be in charge. So what struck me again is that there's a seething cauldron of debate in this field around relief from entire abstinence, so much so he has to tell a story about it, and I can be a living story about it. Much has been written, pro and con. However, there is agreement that most chronic alcoholics are doomed. So while people can gather around and rally around the idea that I might have been doomed, they can't even rally around the idea of a solution. What is the solution to be? And then Dr. Silkworth tells a story, and that's what I can do rather than engaging in debate. I can just tell a story about what works for me, that I was in the food, bedbound, you know, six specialists. I could lose 100 pounds in 20 weeks and then gain it right back again, restricting every form of this disease. And now the general opinion that I was doomed, can only be refuted by my story. I got relief in entire abstinence and go through these steps, and I'm privileged to go through them with others. Thanks for letting me share. And I pass.
Thank you, Julie E.B. Cindy D., you're next, followed by Erica B. Cindy, please go ahead.
Good morning. This is Cindy D. in Texas, gratefully recovered for today. And I appreciate everybody's share around this. And I so identify with this part of doctor's opinion. Seems to be doomed. That's certainly how I felt when I came in here. And, I've shared on the line before that, I recovered from a gastric perforation, which was life-threatening for me and was a consequence of my disease. And I really did feel hopeless. And I felt like the doctor looked at me like I was hopeless. But this paragraph gives me a lot of hope because I can see the turnaround this person, that Hank had, of, no permanent brain injury. So there's hope for me. I can recover. And all I have to do is accept the plan outlined in this book. And my real hope is that, one day I'll have this same experience that people won't recognize the person I've become. I've had that in a mini way during my amends, where my mother said to me that she didn't really recognize me. I was so different, and had that affirmed with some other people. So I think I'm on my way. I have a long way to go, though, because it's at the moment dealing with a lot of core defects that are coming up and a lot of turnarounds I'm having to do. I don't feel like I'm brimming over with self-reliance and contentment, but I have hope that that's coming, and I do have days of that. And it's all, thank goodness, for to the program, because living in the food, I was miserable and exhausted and didn't really have a life. And now, being out of the food and being in recovery, I do have a life, and I'm able to share that with others. And I really appreciate what Julie said about being able to share my story, and that's the best evidence I can give of the program. And just grateful that there's so many of you that have walked the path before me and helped me with your stories and helped me with your counsel and with outreach. And with that, I think I'm going to pass. Thank you.
Oh, and thank you, Cindy D. Okay, Erica B., you'll be next. But before I have you read, I want to let everybody know that we're on page XXX. In the doctor's opinion, it might be different if you're not using the fourth edition. It's the sixth, the last paragraph, which begins, "This immediately precipitates us into reading through three paragraphs ending with no return to alcohol, and we're commenting on all." And after Erica shares, I will take a new grouping. So Erica, please go ahead.
Thank you so much for your service. This is Erica. I'm recovered in Berkeley, California. And this reality that for so many addicts, including me, without intervention, we're doomed to just slide and slide into just a terrible result of being in active addiction. And then what it means to step into the light of completely putting down our substance or our substances and then working the program. And I have actually met in this last year a man who had a spiritual experience about 13 years ago, stopped drinking alcohol, but didn't work any kind of a program. And when I first met him, he was miserable. He was miserable. And, I hear the term dry drunk. So it's not just putting down our substance. It's working this program for those of us who need it. Those of us who need this program, our lives absolutely transform as a result. And then I also wanted to speak about what it is to witness other people who come into, I think about my home meeting, and I've been there for over 16 years, and so I've witnessed people come in, you know, in the darkness of this disease, and then get sober, get abstinent, and begin to work the program. And it's gradual. It's different from, you know, an experience of meeting somebody who's in the throes of the disease and then meeting them a year later, having not seen them for that year. But it's one of the hugest joys in my life to get to witness people, you know, get their health back, get their lives back, and change and grow and transform, and then to think back about how they were when they walked in the doors. And I can think about myself too, and just how horrified I was, how scared I was, how I knew without a doubt I was going to die young of my disease, and I was bulimic, and then you know how I was not able to be present, you know, for people, and how immature I was, and I think about how I am now, and that I get to be an adult, and I have some maturity. And I'm able to contribute to life, to participate in life, thank you, in ways that were just impossible and impossible to even imagine. So thank you. I'll pass.
And thank you, Erica B. All right. I'm ready to take a new grouping of names. Who would like to share on the paragraphs we read today?
Mags C.
Mags C.
Rachel P.
Rachel P.
Hello.
Hello. Try that again.
Sorry. Hi, I'm a newcomer.
And what's your name?
Can you hear me? Melissa.
What's your name? Melissa.
Melissa.
And what's the initial of the last name?
B.
B, okay. Who else?
No, B for golf.
G, okay. Great. Who else would like to share?
Deborah G.
Was it Deborah G?
Yes.
Okay. Who else?
And Beatrice O.
I got you, Beatrice.
Okay.
I've got room for one. Kathy P?
Yes, please.
Okay. All right. So here's what we've got. Mag C, Rachel P, Melissa G, Beatrice O, Deborah G, Kathy P. Mags, please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. And I love this part of the doctor's opinion. Basically, it's not just talking about a physical change, which most of us in this program, I mean, come on. We, you know, by working the steps and having a psychic change, we also get that physical change. And what I've found kind of being in and out of regular OA and OA How and FA and all these other programs is that when I focus just on my physical weight or just the food, I don't get the recovery that I actually need. And I need that psychic change, and then the rest follows. I mean, I hate about myself, I hate my weaknesses, right? And what do we say, that weakness is what brings us together? But, you know, basically I can just shotgun all of, or vomit all of my feelings of resentment and guilt and shame and helplessness, just like I guess somebody was saying Frank P. did from this trembling, despairing, nervous wreck had emerged a man brimming over with self-reliance and contentment. If I don't work these steps, that contentment, that neutrality, that calmness and peace around food is just, it's not going to be there. And I get it personally for me, I need a daily reprieve. So even on the weekends, you know, when things are different for us on this phone meeting. I mean, I go to anything that's recorded. If I need to hear from my fellow food addicts, basically, compulsive overeaters, that this is a real thing in my life, because most of me doesn't want to believe it at all. So I don't stuff all these negative feelings I don't have to feel like this unlovable creature that is still living life from the viewpoint of a victim. I don't have to feel that guilt when I stand up for myself, when these feelings are so real that I just want to stuff them. I don't want to feel them. I want to numb out. And that's what food, you know, did for me. And then we start the steps. And then we start living in that solution. And I stop judging myself so harshly. And that low sense of self-esteem at my core begins to blossom out into something wonderful that I honestly have never had. And I'm 50. And I've hated myself most of my life for playing the victim and begging to be rescued. I feel like that's so unlovable.
Time.
But there is a solution. And just staying in it is what works for me and having that psychic change. And that's all I've got. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Maxie. Rachel P., you're next. You'll be followed by Melissa G. Rachel, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Rachel P., recovered compulsive overeater in Denver, Colorado. Thank you so much for your service. The sentence in this reading that's really sticking out to me is from a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck had emerged a man brimming over with self-reliance and contentment. And that's exactly my experience in recovery. I've only been in for just under 9 months. And I am so incredibly amazed and grateful for this transformation that I've had. And I was actually meditating yesterday, and I was recalling like my before state compared to the person that I am now. And it's so incredible what this program has done for me and what this community has done for me. I at 275 pounds, I was miserable. I was truly a trembling, despairing, and nervous wreck. I was terrified of people. I was so unhappy. I would wake up every morning with a food hangover and just want a different life. And the life that I dreamed of, that I wanted, I have it now. But I'm still who I was then. It's just so incredible, the transformation that I've had and what the steps have been able to do for me. When I was in my disease, I was just crippled by this sense of fear and loneliness, like this hollowness in my chest that nobody could understand me and that I was just so alone. And I've truly, in recovery, been able to replace that feeling with this, I like to call it a heartful sense, this sense of gratefulness and just contentedness and peace. And it's not self-reliance, it's reliance on my higher power that then gives me that self-reliance. And I'm just so grateful for this work. So I'll put that up past.
Thank you, Rachel P. All right, Melissa G., you're up next, followed by Beatrice O. Melissa, please go ahead.
Hello. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah, sorry.
I'm not on a very good line. I'm new, completely new to a vision for you. I've literally just been directed here by another member. I'm in another fellowship, OA fellowship, OA How 2 hours currently, but I'm experiencing trouble with resistance. And I'm really glad to have turned up, washed up here. And it's great to be here, thank you. And I've just read the bits in the doctor's opinion about the psychic change, and yep, I mean, I really have already experienced some changes just by working the program. I've been in OA, OA How, and more recently OA How 2 hours for about 4 years overall, and it really has made a huge difference to my life. I was never in AA or any other fellowship. I'm in the money fellowships, and I'm in this one, the food fellowship. And this one is by far the hardest for me. And I can see that when they say we can't afford anger, we can't afford resistance, we cannot afford the illusion that we are normal eaters or that I am a normal eater, that is, to me, absolutely the truth. and there is still a part of me inside that is resistant. And, you know, I don't want to get to the point where I'm at rock bottom again, if I can possibly help it. You know, I need that psychic change, the essential psychic change that they're talking about. And for me, you know, whatever form that comes in through working the steps, you know, I just would welcome it. It may not feel good. It may not be great. It may not be how I like it. But if I can change and make, have these essential changes and make the efforts and take the actions, you know, it's going to be worth it. But I'm currently in step four, right in the middle of my resentment, so there may be some something going on there for me as well. But it just feels very good to be in this process, and it's very good to be able to be using tools that really work, and also to be reading this literature, which really, I mean, it must be God-given, this entire book. You know, the whole system is entirely God-given, in it seems to me. And, you know, just by reading it, it can help. But by working the steps in this way, it must be very powerful.
Right.
Thank you. We don't quite do it like this, but I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thank you. And I do want, before you I do want to let you know that we do have, after the recording stops, a place where we welcome newcomers. So please stay on the line and you can introduce yourself and offer your contact information and people will get in touch with you. And that's for any newcomer on the line right now. Okay, Beatrice O, you are next and you'll be followed by Deborah G. Beatrice, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Beatrice O from Los Gatos, California. And I think that seething cauldron of debate is not everybody who drinks, well, in my opinion, not everybody who drinks is a real alcoholic. And not everyone that shows up in OA, I think, is a real food addict. I think that when we've lost that power, choice, and control, and they're all, if you lose one, you lose them all. When you lose the power, you lose choice and control. And when you lose choice, you lose control and power. So they're all intertwined. But if you're a real alcoholic, like it says in this book, it says we are people who've lost their legs and don't grow new ones. And in this book, it also says, you know, the moderate, the heavy, or the occasional drinker. That's why on TV we see all these ads. Some people decide that they're going to change their life and they decide not to eat compulsively anymore and they're able to do it. But if you're a real addict, we are doomed. I'm doomed. I'm doomed if I continue to think that one day, someday, I'm going to eat like a normal person, or that I can live ingesting and eating my alcoholic foods. I believe that the big book is uses the medical profession uses the disease model for alcoholics. And they don't use that disease model for compulsive overeaters or food addiction. And I believe for myself, and as it says in this book, I had to abandon myself to God. And on page 63, it says we were reborn. And I know that I would not be able to have that spiritual experience until I put down the food. And the last thing I'll say is I was walking out of a meeting about, it was probably 15 years ago, and I had been struggling with my food once again. And I couldn't get abstinent, and, you know, because for whatever reason, oh, and I was in a group that I couldn't speak until I had 90 days. I mean, I spent 6 years in a meeting waiting to speak because I couldn't do it perfectly. But
fine.
As I was walking out the door, she said, B, you have to put down the food. And I always remember that, and that's what I had to do once again to have a spiritual experience. Thank you.
Thank you, Beatrice O. Deborah G., you're next, followed by Kathy P. Deborah, please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deborah, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And thank you so much for your chair, and thank you so much for all the shares. It just reminds me I don't have to do this alone. I feel so supported in this meeting. And, you know, I was thinking about how just that I am had some long-term abstinence, that's a huge psychic change for me. I mean, I was so enthralled in the food. The solution was always the food. You know, if I was having a good day, bad day, feelings, just everything, mentally obsessing about it, couldn't stop, the insanity with it, and all the energy that I put into it. And in that, you know, shaking, I had the shakes, waking up from withdrawal. I had the crazy head stuff. I had, you know, it's just a wonderful, beautiful gift that I've been blessed with. And going through the steps, you know, continually going through the steps and taking others through the steps. But going through the steps have worked me. You know, I'm doing things in the steps that I never did before. I'm, you know, admitting, being honest about my powerlessness. You know, I'm getting closer to God. I'm doing the prayer and the meditation. I'm doing the 10th step, living in the 10th step. I did the 4th and 5th. And seeing, you know, the defects of character that take me back to the food. And it's watching how God changes me, what he does from what he does in me, and how he changes my life. Having that awareness, having that clarity, having that willingness, it's just so many, 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 many gifts that I get from this. And I'm so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful all of you are here. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah G. Okay, Kathy P., you are up next. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Kathy C., compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. Thank you so much for the chance to share and for the phone meeting and for your service and everyone else's service. And welcome if you're new. I like this part of the reading, too, because I love the wonder that Dr. Silkworth has looking at this person and just not being able to recognize the person physically or through the conversation. I like the part where, you know, he says even after talking to the person for a couple hours, he really can't find commonality with the person that he knew before he was in recovery. And that speaks volumes to me because I look, I look more like myself now that I've let go of 70 pounds of weight. And but people, you know, aren't so focused on that as they they're as focused on that as a kind of wonder in the fact that they even want to be around me. And nobody says, hey, I didn't really want to be around you when you had your disease and were so miserable. It's more my sister saying, wow, you're such a sunny side of the street person now. And I didn't even realize, I didn't know that I was that, and I didn't even realize that I guess I knew I wasn't that, but I didn't know that the kind of acceptance and going along with things and being able to kind of wonder at how fun life can be was coming through in my recovery. And honestly, you know, I was such a hopeless, compulsive overeater, and it was when I realized that I thought food was bigger than God that I started working my way towards surrendering and Overeaters Anonymous and getting a sponsor and working the steps. Because I knew that in my heart that food was not bigger than God, and that I was making the choice to live that way. And I, you know, didn't think I would be able to get abstinent. And I heard someone share that if I focus on getting abstinent, I won't. If I focus on the recovery, the abstinence will come. And that was my experience. And, you know, there's many layers of surrender in this recovery process for me. And recently I was overeating just a little bit here and there, and then a lot sometimes. And so I put myself on a 90 and 90. And I'm just very grateful for the freedom that's given me. Thank you.
And thank you, Kathy C. You will be our last share today. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Robin P. please read A Vision for You? Robin, press star one. There you go.
Thank you. Hi, this is Robin P. I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Vero Beach, Florida. Thanks so much for a wonderful meeting. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.